Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another nice-looking day. It was nice to get a little rain yesterday. We needed that, but back to the warm weather here in the last week of summer, and it still feels like it, definitely. Welcome in. It's the Wednesday Drive. That means Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us here in the studio. Bill, Dan, and Jason with Drew at the controls. JC, how you doing today?
Doing good. Yeah, you're right. It was nice this morning after it got a little bit of rain yesterday afternoon. It was nice and cool today, and but you warmed up a little bit, not terrible. It'll be warmer this weekend, and hopefully the rain stays away in Norman, Oklahoma.
Last time
I looked, it was 40%, so I'll check.
It's supposed to be warm, I know that.
Not too bad, actually. I think unless it's changed. Let me see now.
I'm pretty sure that it's rare for Oklahoma, though, to get, like, sustained, like, long-driven thunderstorms. What you'll get is you'll get bursts of
tornadoes.
Exactly. You'll get bursts of really intense stuff and maybe even some light stuff, but because of that, like, it's going
to 24%, 84 for the high, but 10 to 15 mile an hour winds, which is kind of normal for
That's not bad at all.
I'll take 84 and
man, that'll be a whole lot better for you down there on the field than it was at Baylor.
Yeah, I'll take that for sure.
They rarely have, although Coach Dunn will tell a story that he won in Norman with a 7 or 8 hour weather delay in the middle of the game when he was at, I think, Texas Tech. He's told that story before, but generally Oklahoma's not it's not somewhere where you're talking about weather impacting a ton of their games. Like, that's it's a fairly mild climate, and you usually get your shot at them in the sunshine, and it seems like that's what Auburn's going to get.
Yeah, you know what, though? I'd rather be playing them now at 84 degrees than playing them in November.
Sure.
Playing a Norman in November, because telling what you get there.
But you don't want to be there in end of August either.
This is fine.
Yeah, this time later in the month, okay, like I said, 84 shouldn't be too bad, so should be okay weather for Saturday.
And good to know that. I mean, that shouldn't be the factor, so it comes down to the matchup. Auburn and Oklahoma, and Jason, we were talking about it a little bit before the show. I mean, you look around and nationally, not a whole lot of respect being given Auburn. I mean, not a lot of, well, actually, doesn't look like a lot of national people are giving Auburn much of a shot.
Yeah, it's just the world we live in now. But we were talking about it before we went on the air. If you just glanced at this, you would think Auburn was going to play like 1985 Oklahoma with Barry Switzer and Billy Sims and Jamel Holloway. It's a good team. It's a good Oklahoma team. I haven't seen anything that makes me think that they're unbeatable.
And you're holding your breath about pretty much everybody right now.
There's nobody.
I mean, we're three games in.
Somebody talked about that. I can't remember. Dan Wetzel or somebody this week was talking about, well, they voted Notre Dame because they lost to two of the top teams in the country. What? How do we know that? I mean, I think Miami's pretty good. Texas A&M, we'll see. I think they're good teams. But we don't know those are two of the best teams in the country after three games. We just don't know that yet. I think everything with a grain of salt right now. The only team I've seen up close in a bunch is Auburn. And so far, they've done what they needed to do to win. They haven't turned the ball over. They've given themselves opportunities. If they do that again Saturday, they'll have a chance to win the game again.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, there's a lot of lamenting, the lack of explosive plays offensively and you know, some folks wondering, has Auburn been holding back and sandbagging? I try to tell, my first response to most people is they've done a better job than I can recall in a long time of taking what the defense has said here. Here's what you can get. Auburn has done that. They haven't forced anything.
And if Auburn has been sandbagging in any element of the offense, to me, Jason, it would be they have deliberately toned down how much they want Jackson running.
Correct.
Since the Baylor game. And it's tough to judge this offense when they are deliberately toning down that aspect of it, because it feels, I mean, the one time we've seen Auburn play a Power 5 game this year, Jackson Arnold running was a gigantic part of this offense.
Well, and when you don't do that, you're not RPO. You're just standing in a pocket throwing a ball.
And that doesn't mean dismiss what Auburn's offense has done the last two games. But you know what? The last couple of years, you could pretty much dismiss what Auburn's offense did in games against the Group of Five and the FCS when it came to how things looked against the major conference.
Yeah, scoring 70 or whatever. Here's the thing. First of all, South Alabama's offense was good enough to keep the ball away from you, too. You look at Auburn didn't have a ton of possessions. Yep. So, and when they did, South Alabama's like, look, we're going to give you this 8-yard pass. And to Bill's point, they took it and said, okay, we'll keep taking that. Had some long, sustained drives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly thought Saturday, in terms of passing, I thought Saturday was better than the week before for Jackson Arnold. Mm-hmm. For one, I thought he stood in the pocket. And he scanned the field. Had three or four drops.
Oh, at least a couple of throwaways. Yeah. Yep.
But I thought, oh, there. You know, the fourth down play, Derek Singleton early stood in the pocket, scanned the field, found him in the middle. I thought there were some things there that went, okay, that is patience in the pocket. That's my key word. We talked about it before the season. How patient could they be? They've been really patient. Can you be patient as Jackson Arnold going back to Oklahoma Saturday? That's because you know you got to want to throw for 300 yards. But can you still stay within the framework of this offense and go, hey, because I don't think that Brent Venables is going to go. Now, I do think they'll try to take the runaway.
Yeah, but, I think Brent Venables.
But I don't think it's going to be cover zero man across the
board. No. But I do think that you know that Brent Venables understands Jackson Arnold's ability to run the ball.
Correct.
because of what he did for them last year. So,
yeah,
so I'm sure they will be paying good attention to that, which should open up some things.
What's funny is, hey, it's just the nature of fandom. But for most of the summer, going back to the spring, I would say 90% of the things I heard about Auburn's offense was, he just won't run the football. They just won't run the football. And now people are going, well, they didn't run the football too much.
Yeah. Why didn't you run the ball more? You got to run it more. Now it's like, but here's quit running the ball. Throw it.
I think the bigger concern from folks isn't necessarily why are you running it so much. It's can you go downfield? And when a team team is good enough and takes the strategy of we're going to take the run away and make Jackson Arnold win a game with his arm.
Yeah.
Can he do that? And I understand why, because three games in, Auburn hasn't faced that.
Correct.
So I understand why fans are thinking, like, you're imagining what's going to happen in that scenario. To me, that sets up, that starts with, is Oklahoma going to be able to stop Auburn's run game?
Correct.
Which is a fair question, because I do think Auburn, at least offensively.
Yeah, because Auburn's run game is not just Jackson Arnold.
It's not just Jackson Arnold.
I feel Oklahoma's run game is more John Mateer than Auburn's run game is Jackson Arnold.
And Oklahoma had success stopping Michigan's run game, but I don't know exactly what that means.
Me either.
Because
I don't think Michigan is anything close to as good offensively as either Baylor or South Alabama. I don't think. Yeah. I think both of those teams are much better offensively than Michigan is.
And for Michigan right now, too, you're talking about a true freshman starting game mm-hmm. two on the road. Like, I think not to dismiss
that
Oklahoma's. No.
Yeah, for Michigan.
Yeah,
oh,
the Michigan quarterback, you know, true freshman starting game two on the road like that. Like, that's a – I mean, for it, – it's – you know, we'll see how he progresses over the course of the year. But I think this is an important proving – like, this is a proving ground for Oklahoma, too. Like, there seems to be, and I'll tell you, it stinks a little bit from a gambling perspective, how confident, like your point, Bill, how confident national people seem mm-hmm. to be about Oklahoma, while this line sits at 6. And Vegas seems comfortable, despite something of a consensus, I think, that Oklahoma's going to win this game, that is formed, among the pundit class. It is interesting that Vegas is letting that line sit at 6 when it could very easily be in Norman. It could be a bigger number. And yet, I sometimes in those situations you wonder it's we wondered that about Ole Miss's last two games. Like, why is that number? Why is that number there instead of somewhere else?
Why is it not bigger?
Yeah,
right.
and the underdog covered.
Yeah,
both times.
Yeah, and I think you look at it. You mentioned, but you look at Michigan. Michigan ran for 146 yards and had 4.5 yards per carry. Illinois State 4.5 yards per carry. Last week they held Temple to 26 yards on 27 carries. That skews things greatly. Now Auburn had Ball State, so that skews things Auburn's defensively a lot too. But I think you look at it and go, look. This is a different test for both teams, but I think Auburn's defense has been tested. Now, Auburn's offense, they haven't seen anything like Oklahoma's defense.
No.
Now, Oklahoma's defense is much better than anything Auburn has faced this season.
Although, again, I think Oklahoma's numbers.
But it's hard to tell.
I don't know if they're as good as their numbers say they are.
Here's my thought was
is, maybe they are.
Is Oklahoma's defense right now, do I think this is a better group than it was last year? I don't think it is. I think that last year's defense had a couple of interior guys, had a linebacker.
Taking our Mason Thomas off the
especially
field.
Especially the first half.
The first half because of the targeting penalty skews things.
But you look, and Auburn had 144 yards rushing at 43 carries last year, against them and did some things. But, I think there's going to be opportunities because I do think they're going to try to create negative plays. But when you do that, that also means if you guess wrong in the slants and the stunts, because we watched Auburn's offensive line and it was, Jake Thornton standing behind his offensive line, he's got a group of guys on the other side of the line and he's pointing, you here, you here, you here, and he's giving them different looks every time. Like they expect a lot of movement up front, but when you do that and you guess wrong, then there's huge spots to run the football. So again, decision making in that RPO game for Jackson Arnold is a big part of things. Saturday.
And thus far, he's really appeared to be very good with his decision making there in the RPO.
Yeah, he has. He's done a good job. And again, like I said, we talked about it ad nauseum this summer. I said, look, this is the first time that Auburn has a team that can compete without feeling like you have to be perfect. I think that's the same case. I think it's the same thing Saturday. You don't have to be perfect if you're Auburn. You just can't be bad. And last year they were bad in these situations, and it cost them games.
It's happened too often on the road because the last time, in Hugh Freeze's first year, Auburn is 3-0. Now 3-0 includes that win at Cal that filled you with
That was a whole lot different than that win at Baylor.
Yeah, we made that point earlier this year that you left Cal feeling very little confidence about
very
how this team,
fortunate
yeah well you thought how is this team going to compete in conference play. You left the Baylor game feeling like you've got some serious artillery, but when Auburn went to A&M in 23 and it was from the moment
that's what I'm saying, that's my point. Is you knew going into games like that you were going to have to play perfect to have a chance.
Yeah, you could not. You make a big mistake,
and it's probably over.
And
then you go, hey, we've got to go make more plays to catch up, and then you see the mistakes just multiply. This team doesn't have to do those things.
This team probably can't compound mistakes with more mistakes, especially on the road.
Yeah, no, but I don't think anybody can.
Yeah,
no, but nowadays.
A couple of things that are interesting to me is, last year, obviously, Auburn was at the bottom of the league in turnover. Ratio. This year, Auburn's only turned the ball over one time. Oklahoma, on the other hand, has turned the ball over five times and hasn't forced a turnover yet, which is surprising.
And Mateer has.
He's thrown three picks.
Well, the interception we saw in the Oklahoma in the Michigan game. He misses. He overthrows, and he's overthrown a couple of times, and his receivers have bailed him out. Like he is somebody who. And look, for the most part, he's shown really, really high-level decision-making and accuracy. He makes some plays in the Michigan game in gotta-have-it third-and-long situations a couple of times where if he doesn't do it and Michigan gets the ball back, that game could have been closer going into the late minutes of the fourth quarter. Michigan didn't score in the first half.
No.
Of that game, which
it was a 7-0 ball. It was a rather boring game. For a while.
It was an ugly first half.
Yeah.
It picked up a little bit, you know, in the high leverage moments, but it took both teams took a while to get a lather, right? The mm-hmm. Billy Packer. No, I think if Auburn can, like, what Oklahoma can do on the ground, right? Like that's going to matter. That's going to matter tremendously. We haven't really seen through three games because Sawyer got hurt early. Jason, we haven't really seen a quarterback rushing attack against this Auburn defense so far. Everybody's sort of wondering what's going to happen in coverage. Understandably, I want to know what happens when a quarterback tries to make plays with his legs against this Auburn front seven.
Yeah, no, I think these are games where DeMarcus Riddick, Xavier Atkins, Elijah Melendez, the speed at linebacker for Auburn could be an important part of this game because that's the strength for that group is their speed and athleticism. Bryce Diaz, those guys, they can run. So I think that is a big part of this thing because you're going to have to spy him at some point.
Yep.
You won't do it all game, but there's going to be moments where you do that. And can you make the right call at the right time in certain situations to keep him from making big plays? Because yes, he's going to run the football. He got more attempts than their lead running back does. Jackson Arnold has a lot of attempts too. A lot of those were in one game. But you look at
I've heard that teams last year. Granted, it's a different level of athleticism, but teams in the Mountain West, is that what Washington State did last year?
Mm-hmm.
Defenses in that league would use defensive backs to spy him because they didn't feel like they had a linebacker on the team that
probably could keep up with him.
Yeah, exactly. So they were using you know the free safety or they mm-hmm. bring in you know another defensive back to do it. Which I don't know if Auburn like you said you listed some really athletic inside linebackers that would be candidates.
Didn't Mateer run the ball 19 times against Michigan?
I think that's.
I believe he had 34 pass attempts and 19. Now they weren't all designed runs, but I mean. Just think about of their whatever 70 something snaps, you know, 2/3 of them were Mateer either throwing or running.
And I'm
pretty sure it was 18, 19 rushes.
And what did those numbers look like for Jackson in Waco? Yeah. Right? Was it ballpark?
15 maybe.
Yeah. Let's see. Mateer 19 for 74 yards and 2 touchdowns. They had 40 total carries.
Yeah, so he ran it 19 of their 40 times.
And then he threw it 34 times for 270
yards. Oh, no, remember in the first game it was Jackson 16, Damari 16, and Jeremiah 16.
Yeah,
33 of the 67 snaps for Auburn are either rushes for Jackson or or passages.
That's understandable, but that's not 2/3.
It's not 2/3.
53 out of 74. No,
this goodness. This is 19. Yeah, 53 out of 74.
Yeah.
So like all but you know 21 plays basically.
We need to take a break. One more question since we're talking about this right now. How important do you suspect getting Damari back is for that backfield, and how much do you think? I mean, I think Jeremiah is still the guy that you're going to see starting until a game comes where Damari sort of asserts that he's all the way back and the best option. But I would understand going with the hot hand right now, and the hot hand's Jeremiah Cobb.
Yeah, and I think you look and you know, hey, Omar, you might get a couple of touches. I think third down, pass protection, some of those things, that older veteran guy could be really important.
Sweep game suddenly became huge Saturday.
Yeah,
like,
and
you wonder how much of that is
I think
running
there's,
back. And,
there'll be a lot of things to come, I think, offensively. You know, I know we get to the next one, but I do think having Damari back, at least from that perspective, as a pass protector, could be a big deal.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. We'll go ahead and get to break one here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Opening
1067
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. And let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Bill is up first. Hey, Bill.
Hey guys, I was I listened to, when I get a chance, and a lot of these national guys talk about this game, and I guess because we haven't beaten everybody like South Alabama and Ball State, you know, 55-0, nobody seems to be giving us any kind of a chance at all. I've heard of him getting beat by 10 to 14 points, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they're holding back anything. I suppose that's possible and likely to happen. I think we've got to punch a chance to win this game. And I think they're going to, you know, at the end of the day, if they'll go out there and just give a good effort and be in the game, and I can accept the results win or lose, just play well and give your best effort. But I think we have a good chance to win this football game.
Well, you know, I mean, generally, and I know he's still yet to do that here, but I still feel like a couple of times a year, Hugh Freeze has had really good game plans against teams, and he's done it with less talent than some other teams. I mean, just, you know, you think of last year. I mean, I really felt that, I mean, Matt, Auburn's game plan against Oklahoma was fine till, yeah. you know, till the fourth quarter. The Missouri game plan was fine. I mean,
in year one,
Georgia and Alabama,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, there's good examples.
Even last year,
A&M.
But even last year, Georgia and Tuscaloosa both, you just weren't good enough. Mm-hmm. But like you have the ball fourth down against Georgia late in the first half, and go forward and make the wrong decision and get stuffed. Alabama, you just can't finish in the red zone. You're just not. But yeah, I agree though. I do think it's an opportunity to go out and compete, and I think they will.
And I'm going to go out there. I've been kind of looking forward to this game along with going to Baylor. So I believe we got a good chance to win this game. Any of you guys going out there?
I was on the fence about it. I have decided to stay home. There's a family situation, so I'm going to do some house sitting this weekend. But it's Ferg's going out there, so we're going to get a firsthand report. And then our buddy JC is about to hit the road.
Yeah, Jason's heading out Friday. Since I was getting the knee replacement, I thought – I'd better, not take chances on having to hike too much. Hopefully, things are going much better than I expected. I may have been able to make it, but no, I'm not making it either. But Bill, we're counting on you, man. You're following the team pretty solidly. You've been making all these trips.
Yeah, I've done that for a while. I remember when Dan used to have that for the game show. I called him from about everywhere on the road, and you know it's something I can do now, and I enjoy.
Yeah, it's great.
I enjoy supporting the team. You know, they just
plus
well,
I mean, Auburn's never been at Oklahoma before, so I mean it's neat to go to a place you've never been.
Yeah, I had a blast at Baylor. I wish I could go. I'm jealous of the beat writers getting to check it out. But at least with Baylor, you thought this will never happen again. There's a chance Auburn will be back.
We now know it'll be within the next 4 years.
Right.
But this is the first one. It's special. And, I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole to say this is the biggest game. I mean, it's Hugh Freeze's first time as a top 25, you know, both teams
it's
are ranked.
Probably one of the two or three biggest games in the country this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I think.
Bigger than where game day is.
And I don't know how many times you've said that about Auburn under Freeze.
No. Well, they've played, not they've, just under Freeze. Yeah. I mean, it's been quite a while.
It's been a while.
All right, guys. Well, I enjoy the show. I'm War Eagle.
Great hearing from you, Bill. Have a great trip.
Yeah, you know, to Bill's point, though, look at, I mean, Oklahoma's 35-3 against Illinois State, 24-13 against Michigan. They beat Temple 42-3.
Yeah.
But you go like, what's the difference? That's my thing. It just shows you, though, if you throw the ball a bunch and put up a bunch of yards, people just think you're better. Mm-hmm. Just the way it is. I mean, do you think if Georgia, I say they won, people are going, oh, man, that Georgia team's pretty good. They gave up 40. Do you think Kirby Smart feels really good about he felt good about a win.
Yeah, but this time last week, a lot of people thought.
I thought it was 14-10. I was like, oh, man, it's not going to be a very high-scoring game. Because Georgia hadn't done much, thought Tennessee, and they should have won. They absolutely should have won the football game about four different times. Mm-hmm. And you start going, look, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, you're like, anybody in the world think that was going to be a game in the 40s?
No, no, 41-40 game, no.
Not me.
No.
So you just, again, there's so much you just don't know.
The game has changed. It's not unusual. Now, I mean, if you do, if Auburn can do what they did a year ago and hold everybody, well, Georgia was the exception, but hold everybody to around 20 to 24 or less, you win a lot of ball games.
And I do think after you go back and look, at the way the games went, and you go, you know what? If we don't take as many chances as we did last year, you probably win three more games.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think everybody improves as a coach. Everybody changes and should get better as a coach.
Hopefully you learn.
That's it. And so I don't think there's any question that some of that this season is, look, make other people beat you.
Hey, Hugh Freeze said it the other – I know he said it during Tiger Talk. He said, look, 10 years ago, there's no way that he wouldn't be throwing the ball downfield.
No matter what.
He would just got to throw it downfield. And now he's like, he's itching to do it. But when things are working, when it's working and you're not having to do it, maybe you take a chance if you get up a certain amount.
Yep, but
still, he saw that happen last year.
Yep, and it still points to as well. It points to roster. You can do those things when your roster's better. You can't do that if you're not very good. And, hey, there's still a lot of growth left. You look at especially defensively, almost everybody Auburn's putting in the game after the starters – is a true freshman or a second-year player.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we need to
take the bottom of that. We want to talk some defense.
Let's talk about the secondary. Let's talk about the coverage. Let's talk about some players you may see more of, some players you might not see as much of.
Well, if you're seeing more of some, that's going to be less of others.
Getting Champ Anthony back, what that could mean. We'll talk about all that when we come back. What do you think?
We will do that. Stick with us. Come on in and join us, as a matter of fact, here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, Drew at the controls. And, come on in and join us. I want to shift over to the defensive side of the ball where, Jason, heading into the season, I think we all felt that one of, if not the strength of this Auburn team, could be the back end, the secondary. I mean, the depth of talent that there is back there is really impressive. But I think we may not have taken into account the importance of guys like Bug Thompson, the experience of having somebody back there that could really set everybody, and then Champ Anthony goes down, your most experienced other guy back there.
Yeah, Champ was probably the most vocal guy, and I think that's the one thing you're looking for is like who can be vocal back there, who can take on some of that leadership role, because remember Caleb Harris, true sophomore.
Yeah.
Sylvester's a redshirt sophomore but didn't play very – like that's – you look at it, extremely
those
talented
are the guys
group.
That are normally setting everybody, letting everybody on the back end know who's got
and so
what.
So I think, Champ, I mean, he's still going to have it wrapped up. I just wonder about tackling for him when you have one hand that's wrapped up. That makes it a little difficult to me. I do think he'll play some. I don't know that he can play a bunch. So you look at it and go, I think we're going to see the two freshmen playing a lot more. We've already seen Eric Winters a bunch. We saw Anquan Fagans
more last week.
Mm-hmm. We look out there early, and Anquan Fagans is out there very early when we saw the defense for the first time. I think his coverage skills as a safety, even if he's not a nickel, you look and go, that can be a guy that you can maybe turn somebody loose to an Anquan Fagans at safety. Eric Winters really athletic, can do some things. And so I do think you look at it and go, how do you play defense this week? Because to me, that determines what you're doing in the secondary. Because we have not seen Auburn be really aggressive so far. They've blitzed some. They blitzed some against Baylor probably when they shouldn't have because it was the short, controlled passing game and it left them a little bit vulnerable. I don't know that Oklahoma's going to get the ball out of his hands really quickly. I don't think this is that boom, boom, almost run and shoot feel. That's what it felt like at Baylor. And it felt like that last week against South Alabama too.
Yeah,
it felt very run and shoot-ish. I don't think Oklahoma's going to feel that way. I think if you're Auburn, you can be a little bit more aggressive, play a little bit tighter, and say, okay, look, we're going to try to take away something. And so it's a group that I think is going to – I mean, there's no question they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. They left the field Saturday really early once again, just like they did after Baylor. That group of DBs did not hang around and do a whole lot of celebrating. And so, to me, they know what's at stake, and it's an opportunity for them. And if you still ask me what's the most talented group on this team, I'm still going with the defensive backs. They haven't played that way so far. I still think that's a group of a bunch of guys that can play. Just can they put it together?
Well, and when you talk about the talent of the defensive backs, though, like that includes guys like Jay Crawford and Kayan Lee and Pleasant, who we didn't see on Saturday. And I don't know if even in games where Auburn's secondary has been a problem, even in the moments where the secondary has been a problem, I don't know if it's necessarily
been the outside guys, really
corner guys a whole lot.
I'm curious how much that, like, I mean, we talked about it going into last week. Like, there's no way teams are unless the inside of your secondary is broken. There's no way teams are just going to keep, you know, like at some point your outside corners are going to get tested more significantly. Maybe it's this week. Maybe Mateer is going to try to go to those guys. That's another group where, like, I don't know how useful last season is at all, because you're talking about like Deion Burks is from Purdue. The other receiver's been to six schools.
And Oklahoma's offense was such a different offense because they had no offensive linemen.
The tight end was a linebacker last year, as Andy mentioned.
And he's like, really athletic.
He's a Dallas Clark.
He's got to run a sub 10 400 meters.
He's a Dallas Clark type.
I mean, it feels like tiny school, you know, quarterback. Evan Engram. It feels like Evan Engram that they had at Ole Miss. And like, okay, you do the same kind of things. A guy that's a very hybrid guy, 6'2", 230. So this is –
Trey Burton run. Yeah. Some of that.
So you look at it from an Auburn defense perspective. The question I've had, and I even, you know, kind of brought it up a little bit this summer, is at some point do you put a corner as your nickel? Do you do some of those things? Is this the week to do some of those things? Because Oklahoma, even Texas A&M, the danger for them is spreading the field and have to cover more because of the quarterback moving.
Mm-hmm. Or the question really is, I mean, it's a different way to phrase what you just said. How important is having one of your two or three best cover guys at the star?
Yeah.
How important is that
for this defense? I think it's pretty darn important.
I mean, like I said,
Baylor attacked it. South Alabama attacked it. Oklahoma, I guess, will try to attack it with some of those guys.
You heard Hugh Freeze after Ball State say, like, we really challenge Sylvester to be someone we can count on in that spot. It's sort of an up and down day at South Alabama, you know, against South Alabama after that. Like, this is if they're going with, and he was the first guy up at the star Tuesday. Like, if they're going with Sylvester Smith, it's a huge moment for him, right? Because that's, you would think, based on the first three games, that's something Oklahoma's going to try to attack.
Yeah, and I think, and you know, it's normally offensively, and I think I saw Auburn do it last week at South Alabama too. I think Eric Singleton, Malcolm Simmons are two guys that are massively important this weekend because of the same thing. Because Oklahoma's going to have to, even if they don't put a bunch of guys in the box, you still have to think run first with the RPO and those middle-of-the-field opportunities that we saw some of last week, and that was without Malcolm Simmons. I think both those guys are massively important for Auburn's offense. Conversely, I think the same thing for Oklahoma. You look and go Auburn, those linebackers that have to spy a quarterback, that means the middle of the field, you could leave vulnerable as well.
334-321-1390, back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jason, I agree with you 100%. I think it's that nickel and the safeties are killing us. And I thought when they brought in Fagan's new boy, I thought he made some great open field tackles that saved probably 10 yards on each tackle. That if he wouldn't have made that play, he cut through one guy and dove under and made a great play.
Yeah.
I feel like tackling is the problem, but also covering. But I just feel like for whatever reason, we're not covering the slant. I mean, we're letting them have the inside leverage, and it's almost like we're just lining up wrong sometimes. And it makes you wonder, like, that can't be. I mean, that's clearly they're coaching them to not do that, but they still do it. So I feel like the new guys are. I mean, I saw at the end. I saw Fagan's got like 29, and Winters got 25 plays. I just feel like that might be the solution. Just to be quite honest, but
yeah, I think both those guys will. I don't think their playing time is going to diminish.
No, it's hard to imagine they're not going to get more and more snaps.
No, and I would think that they went with Jacquez early in the season for his experience. Feels like that would be a spot where Newboy would be pushing for more playing time.
I think that's
you've also got to slot Champ Anthony in there somewhere.
Yep, and I think that's the same thing. That's when you wonder if you get a healthy Champ Anthony, then does that allow you then to maybe get him? I think right now that's probably limited how much you maybe could look at Newboy as a potential nickel. Maybe you get Champ back, then you can look at some of that, or vice versa, look at Champ back at the nickel, depending on if he feels good enough from a health perspective.
But part of your question there, I mean, is when you're talking about quick slants and things like that, you're talking about that nickel. And if you're not confident in their ability to cover them more than 6 or 7 yards, if you're worried about 15 yards downfield, you got to be playing a little softer, and that's going to give that quick slant.
Seemed like we were seeing in practice, Pat, Newboy at safety and KLF as the second team nickel, and then Winters Winters and Robinson as the second unit. But yeah, I would think Robinson. I would think Winters. Newboy, and I mean you haven't really seen as much would be like they've tried him more outside.
He's worked at all of them.
But the two true freshmen and Anthony would be the guys that I think you could see more of if Auburn wanted to tinker with personnel.
Well, I keep saying Newboy. I keep saying he's just aggressive. He's just got that attack mentality. Like he was picking off a lot in the 80 game. And I mean,
he has a knack for finding the ball. I mean, he's a ball
hawk. I think we have got to leverage that. We cannot. That's Mateer's best play is that slant. He just loves that slant, and I just feel like we can't give it to him. I almost feel like we just have to let him fake that slant and go out. Let him get a five and out, but don't give him that slant across because that's going to kill us. But I do agree. It's the nickel. I mean, it's the nickel is what's killing us, but. But everything else I feel great about. But if we could just make him have to take more time to throw, I feel like our defensive line will get in there and at least force him to run. And I think is better than letting him sit there and just pick us apart. Because that was killing. It was like a death. You know, Pavia, it reminds me of like death of a thousand cuts. That guy just gets 5 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, first down. Over and over. I
mean, that's not generally Mateer's MO. It's not he's a little more of a gunslinger. I mean, Diego is. Now he'll take some chances, but I think Mateer is a little more of a pure gunslinger who wants to get it down the field more than Pavia does.
Yeah, I just don't like giving up 5 yards, 3 yards, 6 yards.
No, you're right.
It's frustrating as crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they get a touchdown on a one, a busted play, great, but I think we can't just let them have 15-play drives. That's what I think our problem is.
Yeah, but if you give up 370-yard passes, you're going to lose.
Well, that's true.
It's a lot harder for somebody to go 15 plays four or five times in a game than it is to get 70-yard plays three times.
Well, I'll jump in and say that if you're doing the bend but don't break thing, it's pivotal to win the money downs. When you get to a 3rd and 6 or longer or a 4th and not inches –
oh,
right,
yes.
Even for anything longer than 2 on 4th down.
What's Auburn's 4th down defense this year? It doesn't feel like it's been very good.
I think this is where guys like Keldrick and Kieron and Jared Smith, who could be playing more with Amaris questionable. Like it feels like a big moment for the pass rush, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Auburn is 93rd. They faced 11, giving up 7 of 11.
That's not good.
Let's see. I guess Maryland's already faced 17. it's interesting because some of those you don't know what it is. But like, let's see, it hasn't all been
4th and short.
BYU's 94. LSU's 94. Texas A&M's 94th. Penn State's 94th, Tennessee's 108th, Alabama's 111th, Georgia Tech's 111th, Notre Dame's 111th.
Well, it gives you an idea of how many teams are going for it.
That's percentages.
Yeah, I know, but that's why they're going for it on fourth
that's
down.
It,
they're making them.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, that sounds great. Hey, I do think this is the one game where we need to take the ball. if we get the chance, take the ball first, because that defensive guy is going to be out the first quarter, first half, and I think we need to take advantage of that, get as many possessions as we can in the first half.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't know that I'm ever doing that for one player unless it was Reggie White. He does not have a sack in three games. He had nine last year. He had zero the year before that either. It's crazy.
They haven't had a lot of sacks, and they're not creating turnovers.
But their
defensive numbers are really
good.
Yeah,
the numbers are good. Mm-hmm.
Great stuff, Pat. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Last segment with Jason. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
And Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Final segment of hour number one here of the Wednesday Drive. Right back to the Drive hotline, and Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I keep hearing this talk about, you know, how good Oklahoma is, but, you know, it's only because of the Michigan game. I mean, Michigan's a 7-5 team from last year, and they returned only five on defense. And one of those, their best guy in the secondary, didn't even play the first two games. They have nobody returning who had over three sacks on the team. They've got a true freshman, yeah, he's a five-star offensive tackle. He's played one game in his life in college, one. Never faced anybody like Keyron Crawford, never faced a fault. And they also start a freshman cornerback. And we ain't talking Minka Fitzpatrick over there.
No, I think, like we were talking about, everybody. I think everybody has issues. Everybody has questions. And it's so early to go, well, we know what this is.
Yeah, there's many people, Jason, that just love to jump out there and go, okay, great.
Hey, Arch Manning's going to win Heisman.
Right.
And to be clear, like some of this was even coming from Hugh Freeze this week. Like when Hugh Freeze says they look like a team that should be in the thick.
I mean, but that's what you do.
If you don't play up your opponents.
But Hugh Freeze himself said this is an Oklahoma team that looks like they belong in the playoff discussion.
But like if you say something different and you go, man, this looks like a beatable team to me, then everybody in the world freaks out and you become first place.
I agree. I do think there's some middle ground between this team stinks and this team looks like they're in the playoff. And I thought Hugh Freeze in particular seemed very impressed with Michigan.
I think there may be 30 teams that look like they could be in the playoffs
there's probably some ground between better than last year's Oklahoma team and a national championship contender. Right. And we'll see where Oklahoma is on that spectrum this weekend, because I think it is fair to wonder. I mean, they've beaten two teams that were totally overmatched and a Michigan team that may not be all that good.
Yeah, we don't know how good that Michigan team is.
Right. So we also don't know exactly how good Baylor is.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I think
Dan, the Michigan quarterback, he had played one college game.
That's correct.
And for sure, they limited what he could do. He only ran the ball three. That's including scrambles. He ran it three times. Oklahoma played a defense where they sent seven people, slanted them toward where the ball should go, and left four wide receivers being covered by four people all over the field.
Yeah, there was no threat of downfield passing from Michigan in that game.
Michigan has one even average threat at wide receiver. They don't even have a big time receiver.
Great stuff, Brett.
Yeah, we're running short on time here. I mean, it is. It's still so early. We're a quarter of the way into the season.
Yeah,
and conference play is just getting underway.
No, and that's it. There's so much that we still have to learn about everybody involved. And I do think that, I mean, last Saturday showed it. I think we'll see more of it this week. In that, I think there are much. I'll say this. We were talking about Kentucky a little bit, but I think they're clearly the worst team in this league, but I don't think they're terrible. But I think I think the bottom continues to be better because of the portal.
Yeah.
The bottom of the league continues to be better, and I think the top of the league continues to come back toward the middle a bit. It's still good.
I said the other day.
Yeah, Georgia, Alabama, these teams are not – 2008, 2017.
No, there's not a huge gap between them. I think the top 10 or so teams are just as likely to beat any of the other nine.
Think about the strengths of the superpowers. Think about the Georgia defense we saw this weekend. Yeah. Think about the LSU offense that hasn't broken 20 yet this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Think about the Texas offense. Like, I mean, there are, like, you want evidence that the supposed best teams in the league are coming back to earth a little.
Correct. But everything points back to preseason football rankings. I talked about
that's right.
Every bit of it. LSU wins at Clemson and go, whoa, they're one of the best teams in the country. Are they?
Yeah.
Because Clemson's terrible right now. They may be good at the end of the year. I mean, Florida State beats Alabama. Florida State won two games last year. Florida State beat Alabama. They beat a directional FCS school and were off. And they're earning the top 10.
Yeah, they jump.
They're in the top 10.
Jump four spots.
Because they beat Alabama.
Jason, great stuff, man. It's always great to have you in here. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys have got going.
Yep, check us out, auburnundercover.com. Be on the road this weekend, obviously, so lots of coverage coming up from Norman, Oklahoma, but lots of previews heading out. Show tomorrow night, live show, two-minute timeout. Got a whole lot going on, so come check us out.
Absolutely. No question about it. Great stuff from Jason Caldwell. We're back with hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Nice looking Wednesday afternoon, a little warmer. After the rain that came through yesterday, and looking forward to some more of this type weather here as we wind down. We're into the last week of summer. The fall will officially be here next week. And by next week, we will be in conference play. We'll have played a conference game. And, you know, as we've been saying, I mean, there's still so much that you don't know about most of the teams in this country. There haven't been we had some great games opening weekend, and we've had some good games this past weekend. Georgia Tennessee, what a fun game that was. But I'm still not 100% sure that I know exactly what to expect from Georgia each time out, or Tennessee, or Alabama, or Texas. Now, I mean, and on through the SEC and the country.
Now, we were running out of time there in hour number one. I love Jason's contribution. If you missed any of hour number one, check out the podcast. Mm-hmm. Southeastern Industrial Contractors presents podcast The Drive, available wherever you get podcasts. He's part of the crusade against preseason rankings. I don't think they're ever going anywhere.
No, I don't. But he's right in that.
Oh,
some people don't want to be proven wrong, and others just seem to be followers. They see those teams in there, and they expect them to be the best teams, regardless.
And there's puzzling stuff in the rankings every week, and it is fair to wonder. I think in both cases, if sports information directors or coaches are voting for the coaches poll, or if AP voters are, they're not watching all the games all day long. Yeah, so I almost, if you got rid of the preseason polls, what would end up happening inevitably is that Fox and ESPN would have their own.
Sure, they'd put their own out.
FPI or whatever.
Right. Power rankings.
They would do, yes. They do it. I mean, just to have numbers next to the names for the sort of these early on. I do think one of the better things about an expanded playoff is that we've taken some of the power.
Yep.
Away from these polls towards deciding the national champion. Now they are they are largely for entertainment only. I mean, they play some role in deciding what things look like, but I don't think the AP poll or the coaches poll necessarily played a big factor in SMU making it over one of the 9-3 SEC teams last year, right? I don't think it was because of where they were in the
Not purely, no.
No, so I think it is nice that you've sort of taken that away. But No, you're right. I mean, I think Jason's larger point that a lot of this is still based on last year and preseason perception about teams, and we don't have enough data to talk conclusively about. And I would say, you know, anyone's side of the ball, right? Like, you think about, like, I mean, yeah, Mateer's your current Heisman favorite. I don't know what this passing attack's going to look like once we get into SEC play.
No, I mean, John Mateer is he's an impressive quarterback. He's put up really good numbers. But your Heisman favorites have wildly changed since the beginning, since preseason to here in the fourth week of the season.
And if you want to make the case, this is the best defense Mateer has ever seen. Like, it's. I mean, we were saying it about Michigan 2 weeks ago, and I don't know.
I think it is the best defense. It probably is the best defense he's seen. I don't know what kinds of defenses did he see 3 years ago. I don't know.
When Mateer was playing Mountain West ball last year.
Yeah, but year before that. Maybe,
but it's still not. He's still not a guy who with the major conference type experience, right? Because he was doing the Incarnate Word, like he did the jump, he did the Cam Ward move. Like he's not someone who's faced this kind of competition ever. Like it's a big test for him too.
Well, then yes, I would say this probably is the best defense that he's faced this weekend. We'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And let's get to the Drive hotline, and Yellowhammer gets us started. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Good afternoon. The deep passing route is a great thing, even if it doesn't work all that well, just because it makes the defense defend more real estate. And so I think we have the receivers that can make that work. But at this point, what do you think about our offensive line? Can it provide the kind of time for that to develop?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot expected out of this offensive line. They played very well, running the ball. And I thought this past week probably had their best game in pass protection. But, hey, South Alabama is not Oklahoma defensively.
Do you have any kind of impression about Oklahoma's pass defense?
Well, their best pass rusher is out for the first half because he was charged with targeting late in the second half of their last game. They start, as Brett said a little while ago, they start a freshman at corner. They've got a lot of transfers on both sides of the ball, and they really haven't been tested. Bryce Underwood, the Michigan quarterback, was a true freshman making his in his second game of his college career, and then they played two overmatched teams. So I really don't know what to expect from their, pass defense.
It's so far so good because, like Bill said, I mean, the results have been positive, but the question is how good are the passing offenses that they've faced? I mean, they held Illinois State to 3 points. Michigan really couldn't get much of anything going through the air. Underwood goes, like, what, 9 of 20-something? In the Michigan game,
yeah, he was like 9 of 24,
and then Temple was just totally overwhelmed. So you don't have a sense of what Oklahoma is going to do when they face a more sophisticated passing offense. The question is, how sophisticated is Auburn's passing offense? Right, like how much? I mean, Auburn hasn't necessarily shown through three games. Auburn necessarily hasn't. You know, they haven't shown that ability to consistently go downfield. They haven't had the need to, scoring 30 points in all three of these games. So, no, I think that's one of the X factors this weekend, is that you have an Oklahoma pass defense that hasn't really been challenged against an Auburn pass offense that hasn't really had to show, win.
Yeah, they haven't been forced into obvious, passing situations and long yardage type situations either.
Yeah, Auburn has not had to win games through the air to this point in the season.
I was just wondering, you know, what the run-pass ratio would be in the strategy attacking Oklahoma. It's just hard to say, I guess.
Well, I mean, you want to be able to run.
Yeah, Auburn ran, on 52 of its 67 plays against Baylor? I think 52 of Auburn's, you know, I mean.
They can do that, yeah. I mean, if they're successful running, you're going to keep running. I think Oklahoma's going to force Auburn to throw the ball more than that.
They could, but I think the strategy going in would be if you can find a way to win this game without Jackson Arnold throwing the ball more than 23, 25 times, I think Auburn would absolutely take that sort of strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, can Oklahoma force Auburn to throw the ball more than that? That's going to be the chess match. That's going to be how things play out. But I think going in, Auburn would absolutely love to win this game with Jackson Arnold, you know, going, you know, not having to take too many chances with the ball, and Auburn being able to overwhelm on the ground.
Okay, well, I hope we can do something to them. Thanks.
Yeah, well, you know, I like Auburn's chances. I mean, we were saying a while ago, not a lot of national people seem to. I think John Mateer is right now one of those guys that has caught the eye of a lot of national folks, as you mentioned. I mean, he's been hyped as one of the top Heisman candidates right now. So.
And what's strange to me, and the point I made in the first hour too, like what's strange to me is that for a game where the consensus seems so decidedly Oklahoma, like when you look at national folks, and a lot of it's based on the first three games and sort of, and the belief that, and I think this is incorrect too, the belief that Oklahoma has played a tougher schedule than Auburn, which I've seen some people suggest,
yeah?
I think we don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess going to the Big House.
It was at Oklahoma.
Are you sure?
That game was in Norman, yeah. Michigan, yeah, that game was in Norman for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then no. Why playing a home game? I mean, they
I mean, it's Michigan.
Their only road game has been at Temple.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's Michigan.
So what? Right?
Like that's the that's,
like,
so that's
like Jason said, that was a 7-5 Michigan team
exactly
last year.
I think
that now had to come on the road to Norman.
100%. I think people are taking the brand name of Michigan and assuming, oh, a win over Michigan is that's a playoff team that you just beat in Norman. Like, I assume if you think Oklahoma's played, because I think South Alabama's better than either of the group of five teams.
Yeah,
that
I'd be interested in watching South Alabama and Michigan
and
on
think,
a neutral site.
And I think at Baylor could very well prove to be a more impressive win than home against Michigan at the end of the season. Like we'll see how both teams do in their respective leagues. But if at the end of the season Baylor is closer to the top of their conference or competing for a conference title and Michigan isn't, it wouldn't shock me all that much. So I think there is some surface analysis of like, oh, well, Oklahoma beat Michigan and the brand name of, you know, it's the winningest program in college football history, Bill. And it's like, that doesn't, I don't know, like I would think that, yeah, you know, I think the schedules are comparable, and if you want to tell me that the best win of the bunch is going to Baylor and winning the way Auburn did on opening night, like I think there's absolutely something to that.
And then Jason, you know, Jason in first hour, and again, I hope you had a chance to hear Jason Caldwell. He's always great. Jason feels pretty strongly that he's not convinced that this Oklahoma defense is better than last year's Oklahoma defense, which Auburn. Remember, Auburn had a 21-10 lead in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma last year.
And the ball.
And that is the game. Yeah, that's the game where people started the, what are you doing throwing the ball?
And the ball, yeah, 20,
yeah.
Up 11.
You threw a pick six.
Yeah.
You threw a pick six
I mean, usually, I've seen it happen in a couple. When you've got
the ball, an 11-point lead at home.
And fourth quarter.
In the fourth quarter. Yeah. Yeah, you should win.
Marty Schottenheimer got fired for losing a game like that about 20 years ago with the Chargers.
Yep.
In the playoffs. But no,
Oklahoma's defense is not much better. If they're about the same as last year, Auburn ran the ball pretty well against them last year.
I made a mistake with Mateer, by the way. I said Incarnate Word. He was at Michigan. He was at Washington State.
He's at Washington State, but he did not start a game, and he only threw 17 passes in his career. Until last
exactly.
year,
yeah, last year because he was Cam Ward's backup.
Yes,
so he was. It was
3 years at Washington State.
Yes,
including a red shirt, and then
but did but yeah. did not see top-tier Pac-12 competition as Washington State's quarterback, played the Mountain West schedule last
right.
year.
That's what I was wondering. I was thinking, that's right, I'd forgotten he was Cam Ward's backup year before last.
Played the Mountain West schedule last year, and then played, because we were thinking, oh, the Michigan game is a huge step up in competition defensively, and there were times when the Michigan speed seemed to bother John Mateer a little bit. Ultimately, he had a pretty good game, took it over in the fourth quarter. But no, I would think that this Auburn... How this Auburn front seven contains him and how Auburn secondary holds up in coverage, I mean, it's absolutely massive in this game because I think there's a chance that it's the best competition Mateer's ever faced.
Yeah, let's see. Here is their schedule a year ago. Portland State, Texas Tech, Washington, San Jose State, Boise State, Fresno State, Hawaii, San Diego State, Utah State, New Mexico, Oregon State, Wyoming and Syracuse in the bowl.
And there's a handful of power conference teams in there, but I mean it's general. I mean that was
absolutely not going to knock his numbers. Last year.
And keep in mind that Cam Ward played a similar schedule, and then went to Miami and was the best quarterback in college football.
But he'd played a Pac-12 schedule.
He'd played a Pac-12 schedule. You're right. He'd played more major conference teams when he made the jump. But still, like I think the question with Mateer is. Going into the season, like how much can he continue? Like what kind of jump is he going to see from the teams he was facing last year to now? And this Auburn game is, and Oklahoma will have more tests, over the course of the season.
Oh, no question about
that. Auburn game's a big test for him, though.
Is the first one in conference, and it's interesting because everything I've heard from when I hear most people talking about it, the talk has been. How much pressure is there going to be on Jackson Arnold, and how much confusion can Brent Venables create for Jackson Arnold? And I think you need to look at the other side, too. Mm-hmm. There's going to be pressure on John Mateer and Oklahoma because they are the favorite. Yeah. And we'll see. I mean, DJ Durkin knows a little bit about defense as well.
I think that the plan going in, I'll be surprised otherwise, Bill, as much as people want to see Auburn – letter
air it out,
fling it.
Yep,
as true. I get that. I would still think. I think Auburn would love to win this game, setting things up with Jackson's legs.
Hey, if they can RPO their way to a win, they will. They will RPO all day long.
And you know what you didn't see in the Baylor game that you saw a little bit more of against South Alabama was Auburn using the pre-snap motion.
Oh, the Eric Singleton,
the pop pass,
yes,
and the sweep game. That's without Malcolm Simmons, who I think plays on Saturday.
Yep.
And I think Malcolm, even though you would think he profiles as a deep threat, I think Malcolm's maybe more dangerous closer to the line of scrimmage, getting the ball.
Go ahead and get the ball in his hands in space if you can and see what he can do.
Most importantly, get the ball in his hands.
Yes, that is right.
So get the ball in his hands and see what he can do with it. So I would think, and you mentioned, I mean, Auburn wasn't really setting up Jackson's run off of that stuff, but you can. Like you can fake the pop
pass.
That's
another option.
You can fake the sweep. Auburn didn't really do much of that. I think setting a lot of stuff up with Jackson's legs is going to be crucial on Saturday.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean he has to carry it 15, 20 times.
Oh, but he could.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 15 plus carries would not shock me at all for Jackson Arnold on Saturday, especially the way Auburn won at Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they're getting success and they think they can keep asking Jackson to. Set up second and two. Hugh Freeze is going to have to pass the marshmallow test again, and he's going to have to resist the urge to chunk it downfield when that's right there for him.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Jeff, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. We've got calls holding. Let's get right to them. Jeff is up first. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's up, Jeff?
Not a whole lot. So, last night, just by default, as this happened, flip over and catch the Oklahoma Temple game.
Oh, okay.
Total domination, but not very impressed. Very undermanned Temple team. Mateer, talented, but he's definitely a gunslinger, a Manziel type. If we stay in our lane from a defensive perspective, he is very confident. He sees a target, and he just throws right at that target. I don't see much deception in his game. He sees the target, and he fires. You know, that's the definition of a gunslinger. He's definitely that, but not much read from Temple. Temple's defense. So with all due respect to Oklahoma, I think this is by far their best competition. Michigan, a true freshman on the road. If you remember, that game was only a touchdown late, and they kick a field goal. So Michigan gave them all they can handle with, you know, with a lot of young and young inexperienced players. That being said, we have got to go into that game thinking offensive minded. We cannot go in with a reserved personality that we're just going to run the ball down their throat, which was good, but we have got to unleash our receivers and whatever arsenal we have against this team. I think that's our best scenario to come away with a big.
Well, I think they've got to be able to do, you know, whatever it takes, be it, you know, having to throw it downfield. Again, if they can run it against Michigan, then I say, you know, keep on running it and then use what, you know, use whatever you can with the pass.
Yeah, because
I know it's just it's so tempting. You want to go ahead and see those, let's see that 60-yard touchdown pass here early on. But if like Jason was saying, well, he didn't say it in this vein, but if you're able to get 4 to 6 yards every time you carry the ball, then there's no need to be, you know, taking too many chances.
Yeah, I agree for the most part, Jeff, but I also, you know, you can't always get what you want, Bill. And I think about, like, we would have said this exact same thing going into Baylor, and Auburn completed 11 passes that night and scored 38 points led by double figures for most of the second half.
You're right. But Venables is going to have a different mindset than Baylor had.
And if he does, then I think Auburn needs to be ready to go downfield.
If they load the box and they're playing zero, I mean, if they've got every one of their corners out there on an island, absolutely, you've got to go to your guys.
But I keep thinking we have not seen since the Baylor game ended, we have not really, not just because of Damari's injury, but also because of a deliberate desire to reduce Jackson's exposure. I don't think we've seen the real Auburn offense these last 2 weeks. And I think against Oklahoma, I think a lot of that's quarterback run driven.
I agree. I'm thinking Venable, based on his history, I think he's coming to load the box because in their mind, they know what our strength is at this point, running. So as much as we love to run, absolutely, take your chances. But be ready to strike.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Make them pay. You have to do that. You just cannot be, you know, very vanilla. You know,
no, I don't think Auburn's not going to win this, Jeff.
They need to be Baskin Robbins.
If Auburn can win this game with handoffs up the middle, Oklahoma's in big trouble, right? Like, because if Auburn can go up there and it's Cobb up the middle for 7 or 10 or 15, like if that's what this is, then Oklahoma's outmanned, and they're probably outmanned in like a lot of conference games this year. It's gonna take. You're right. It's gonna take the full menu. Of Hugh Freeze's offense, but I think a lot of it is, and I think in a lot of games this year, a lot of that's going to be set up by Jackson Arnold and those running backs on the ground.
We have, you know, with these games, the way the college game is played now, and I was listening to another radio network, it's hard to just rely on defense anymore. You know, at some point you're going to get into shootout with these guys. Look at Georgia. Who would have expected that Georgia get into a shootout and win the game?
Who would have thought Texas A&M Notre Dame is going to be a 41-40 game?
I think it takes 30 on Saturday, Jeff. I think the winning teams. Yeah. I think the winning team's breaking 30. Maybe they both are.
I agree. I like our chances if we open it up. I really do. Because Venables, I believe they're thinking shut the run down, which I agree. But Freeze and his staff has got to be thinking take our shots when we get them. Take them. So that's my scenario. So we'll see. War Eagle.
All right. Appreciate the call, Jeff. We'll get to a Mitch before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. Three things. First thing, you guys were talking about kicking yesterday. Did you guys see the Dallas kicker on Sunday?
Oh yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, you get to midfield and you're definitely in field goal range.
Right, right. And I mean, the story behind it, he was a professional soccer player and just decided to kick I guess hired a coach and he's like what is the NFL record now for a field goal? Is it like 66, 67?
67.
I want to say someone's made a 67 yarder in a.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember because I think he made, what did he make on Sunday? Well, I mean,
64.
Was a chip.
It was only 64, I think.
Yeah. Well,
I think Aubrey
actually 66 is the record.
Yeah, Justin Tucker's made a 66 yarder.
I was thinking there was a 67 for
Aubrey
some reason.
Made a 65 yarder last year for the Cowboys, and Matt Prater's made a 64 yarder in his career as well.
Wow, that's just amazing. But moving on, a little history today. Do you guys know what happened on this date in 1994 in Auburn football?
94, was that the LSU game?
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Is that earthquake? Or is that interception?
That's interception. That's the interception.
94,
game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, it was, I was actually out in San Antonio, Texas at Lackland. We were given a pass test for base trainees, and the game started at like 11. I think it was a Jefferson Pilot game or something.
It was definitely a day game. I remember that. I didn't remember if it was early or not.
But yeah, we had it on in the day room, and then once we got done with what we had to do, we all jumped on the express bus and went to downtown. And when we got to the sports bar that we went to, because I think when we left, they were losing. And when we got back, they had already intercepted three or four passes. I don't remember how many they intercepted the whole day, four or five. But, they were making the comeback. So we got to watch the second half at a sports bar. And so, 1994. It's hard to believe it's that long ago.
Yeah, it was LSU was up 23-9 early in the fourth quarter. And, it was. They kept throwing. I couldn't. Was Lynn Amedee the coordinator at LSU? Jerry DiNardo was the head coach. I couldn't believe that DiNardo didn't go over and just like jerk the offensive coordinator out and say hand the ball off, because they kept throwing and Auburn kept intercepting and not just picking off but pick sixes. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Do you remember how many pick sixes they had? I know they had.
I was thinking. It was at least three, because I remember Ken Alvis, Brian Robinson,
and Fred Smith.
Three.
Three.
So three. Yeah, there were five picks. Three of them went for touchdowns. It was crazy.
Yeah. And last thing, Bill, I mean, you might remember this, or you were alive. Well, I think I was alive too, but very young. And they brought it up in the LSU Florida game when the Florida quarterback threw five interceptions.
The all-time record for a Florida quarterback, I absolutely was. John Reeves threw nine against Auburn. I believe it was 1970.
Wow.
1970. The 69. It was 69 because John Reeves and Carlos Alvarez were the hottest combination in college football. It was the sophomore year, so that was the first year of college eligibility for those for that pair. But Auburn had a pair of sophomores named Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley. But, yeah, John Reeves threw 9 interceptions against Auburn in that 1969 game. And
Florida was pretty good that year, right?
Yeah, they were. They were a top 10 team.
You would think a year where
when they threw the 9 picks.
Yeah, you think a quarterback throws 9 interceptions, the team's not going to be very good. But the,
they were pretty good.
That was a pretty good Florida team.
Well, do you remember what the final score was? I
can make it up. 38-12.
Yeah, I was going to say 30-something to not much.
I don't remember it, but I've looked it up recently, Mitch.
That was one of those games where I don't recall that one being on TV. There weren't nearly as many games.
Reeves was
on TV back then.
Was a first round pick, broke a lot of Spurrier's records.
Yeah,
before
he was.
His career was over. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, his daughter was
I'm excited.
Lane Kiffin's wife.
Oh, is that right?
Yes,
oh, Kiffin
that's
married
the in-laws. John Reeves' daughter.
Now, is this part of the Dan Reeves family?
No. John Reeves was R-E-A-V-E-S. Dan Reeves is R-E-E-V-E-S.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's all I got, guys. War Eagle, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Mitch, good hearing from you.
He went to T.R. Robinson in Tampa, which is a high school my dad went to for a little while before moving. When my grandparents were down there. So, yeah, I know a little bit about John Reeves, but.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more of your phone calls for the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. This is painful. I'm going back and looking at last year's Auburn-Oklahoma game. I'd forgotten how decisive it felt there in the fourth quarter.
Whose blood would boil, Bill?
T-Bones. Absolutely. My goodness.
Oh,
all right, 334-321-1390.
We'll go over that at some point.
We have a full bank of phone calls. Who do we have up first, Drew?
Michael
is up first. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Bill, Dan, in 69, it was Judge Sonny Ferguson, or later on it became a judge, Sonny Ferguson, and I think, I don't know how many of those interceptions he had.
I would be willing to bet that guys like Larry Willingham and Buddy McClinton were involved, too.
Well, Ferguson got, even though he was he played what they then called Rover, which is a linebacker,
right. Mm-hmm.
He got National Lineman of the Week. He had multiple interceptions. And then talking about Reeves and Alvarez, and by the way, the score did not indicate how soundly we beat them. It was either the next year down there or when they came back as seniors, we beat them. We scored 67, and
yes.
I can't remember when we shut them out.
It was absolutely a demolishing a couple of years. I'll tell you what, Carlos Alvarez, though, was one of the most impressive wide receivers I ever saw.
Only outshined by Terry Beasley, which you're right. Alvarez was good. And that year when they rolled in as sophomores, Florida just thought they were going to roll over.
Well, Dan looked it up. That was the only game they lost that year.
I don't think Alvarez and Reeves ever beat us.
No, I don't think they did.
And by the way, the LSU game, I hate to correct you. It was Curly Hallman.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It wasn't Jerry. You're right. You're absolutely right. My bad.
What I remember about that game, besides the outcome, when LSU scored their last touchdown, I jumped up and said, I'm out of here. And
Auburn was being dominated. I mean, the stats there were so one-sided.
They were celebrating on the sidelines. The band was playing that damn song that they play every time somebody does anything positive. Anyway, I jumped up and said, I can't take this. My brother slammed me down on the the seat and said, "This game isn't over yet." I said, "You've been drinking too much." But anyway, he was right. Thanks, guys.
Great hearing from you, Michael. Yeah, and you're right, Curly. It's I don't know why I jumped to Jerry. 334-321-1390. Uncle Ollie is up next. What's up, Unc?
Hey, gentlemen. Always good to talk with you. Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder. Yeah, it was Curly Hallman. A couple of things I remember about that game. That was the old Jefferson Pilot days. That started at 11 o'clock that
okay.
Morning.
Yeah, I just remembered it being daytime. I didn't remember when it started.
Yeah, 11 o'clock game. The other thing, and I'm going by memory, and when you're 66, that's a dangerous thing. But I do not think Auburn scored an offensive touchdown. Their first touchdown was a recovered fumble in the end zone.
The next few were interceptions, right?
Right. Yeah. So Auburn did not score an offensive
touchdown. Yeah, offensively, it was a rough day offensively.
And if I remember right, everybody was booing this, that, and the other. I could be wrong, but I think that's the first time we saw Damian Craig come in. I think that's the first time we saw Damian Craig enter the game, because we were so bad on offense, they put Damian in.
You know, I do recall. Here's one thing I do know from memory is Damian barely played as a freshman, and that ended up costing him an extra year of eligibility, and 97 was his senior year. So it would have been, it would have been in 94, that would have been his freshman year. I was thinking it was like a meaningless like homecoming game that he got in, but I can check.
I feel rather confident. I could be wrong, but I just remember the crowd was getting angry because we weren't doing anything, and they finally just like, okay, and they put Damian in. And that's the first time I remember seeing Damian Craig at quarterback.
Well, that may have been. I know that he burnt that red shirt year for just a few snaps.
Yeah. That was a great game. But the thing I remember about it, we didn't score an offensive touchdown, but we won.
Yeah, unbelievable.
We had a recovered a touchdown in the end zone, and the rest were interceptions. It's hard to do that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But anyway, always glad to talk to you. If you look, Google it and find out different about Damian, let me know. But that,
yeah, I'll definitely.
I'm
working on that right now. I'll try to check.
All right. Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, Uncle Ollie. 334-321-1390. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Once again, I always want to thank Pat and Dan and the folks at Sky Bar for sponsoring the hotline. And I am a little late because I was going to say what Uncle Ollie and Mike said. That was Curly Hallman, and DeNardo came in
after
that December, right?
Yep.
Left Vanderbilt to go down there. But the other thing you're talking about, Lane used to be married to John Reed's daughter. From what I hear, you know, he, after his dad, or maybe before his dad died, he kind of got religious again and gave up drinking. Well, I heard that John Reed's daughter moved back in with him, and they got the whole family together in Oxford now.
Wow. Well, that's good.
I don't know if they remarried, but I think she's part of the equation again.
Well, that's good. Good to hear that. I thought you were going to call me out, and I was wrong on that. I felt pretty sure of that one, but
no,
that's cool.
I got a friend that you know that's very, very versed on Florida Gator stuff.
Oh yeah,
and he told me the other day that he had moved back to Oxford, and the family's all reunited. So, very cool. I got nothing else. Thank y'all for this, and War Eagle, and beat Oklahoma.
All right, good hearing from you, John. 334-321-1390. We'll get one more before our final break of the afternoon. And Pat is back. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I was going to comment on the guy two callers ago. He's right. I was there at that game
And they were booing. I don't remember if I was booing, but I know that I was really not happy. There's no way we would have scored if they wouldn't have thrown.
No, you're absolutely right.
But I do remember Damian Craig. I was trying to think when he brought it up. I was trying to think. I knew it was a black quarterback that we were thinking was coming in was going to be great. But I was thinking it was Jason Campbell. But then I was like, no,
Jason was definitely later.
So I was trying to think who it was before him that we had that came in, and it was Damian. I do remember that because he couldn't do it. He couldn't do anything either. I think he went three and out. So it was literally we're punting to basically with like 3 or 4 minutes to go in the game, and it's like we gave up, and I was like we're giving up. We're not even going to go for it on fourth down. And then they came out and threw it again. I was like, oh my God! And it was he ran it back, and I was like, it was like the greatest thing. I remember Fred Smith too. It was like, it was incredible. It's just the most bizarre, stupid coaching you ever did see.
That was it for Curly. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was definitely Damian Craig though, because I remember now. Okay. It makes total sense too why he lost his extra year of eligibility. So that was a good call. That was a good call by far. Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Good hearing from you, Pat.
He redshirted in 93, though, didn't he?
I guess I read that he did.
I think I thought Damian, like, would he have been able to? Because well, no, then he and then, you had
if that's the case, then we should have seen him more in 94.
You had Knicks, didn't you? Like, yeah, that, you that had. Would have been the thing.
Pat,
like,
that was Pat. That was Pat's senior year.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe it's a matter of like, I mean, we've seen that before, where it's like, how much do you mm-hmm. introduce the backup change of pace quarterback?
Or maybe it was Pat's junior year, but whatever, Pat was the starter.
Yeah, so I mean, so with an entrenched starter, maybe it was a matter of mm-hmm. of just, you know, how much do you need to deploy him? But
yep, 3-3.
We've done that before.
Oh, you're right about that. we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join us.
We were doing that like 4 weeks ago. Remember?
Yeah.
People were like, hey, how much is, you know, at least we've moved on to other topics because yeah, the question of like you know what there has not been very much how many quarterbacks, how many play callers chatter of late.
No, you're right about that.
And I don't think either of those things.
I'll just give it an off day, and we'll hear it again. We'll get to that final break. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
River City Door Company understands your time is valuable.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Danny, it's been fun. I mean, obviously, I mean, we talked a good bit about Auburn, Oklahoma. We've gotten into some other, you know, blasts from the past, too. I don't know, you know, talking about some of the other notable games. But, yes, I mean, if Oklahoma is not noticeably better than they were last year defensively, then there's no reason to feel like Auburn's not going to be able to have some success against them. I mean, granted, this is going to be tougher because it's there in Norman. It's the first conference game. It is the, you know, Auburn's first road conference game. That this is definitely going to be the toughest situation that Auburn has faced this year.
And is Auburn going to – I mean, we did not see Auburn have to change strategy mid-game against Baylor. Like, we didn't see Auburn face the resistance that led to adjustments or, having a counterpunch. Can Oklahoma force Auburn into that? Like, can Auburn, because I think Auburn's going to want to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the fact that Auburn, you know, Auburn beat Baylor with 11 completed passes, right? Like, if Auburn can do that again, you know, if Auburn go to Oklahoma and find a way to have that kind of success on the ground, it's going to be really tough for Oklahoma. Because if your defense is giving up, that kind of production on the ground, there's pressure every time you have the ball as an offense. You feel like you have to score when your run defense is at a disadvantage. If Oklahoma can, you know, if they can win that battle, you know, what does it look like when Auburn goes downfield? How often will they do it? What kind of results are they going to get? How much does the familiarity with Jackson Arnold matter?
Oh, yeah, I think it does matter. I mean, it matters some. Obviously, Brent Venables should feel like he knows the strengths of Jackson Arnold and what his weaknesses were a year ago, and some of the guys that Jackson Arnold scrimmaged against. Although rosters turn over so much, yeah. I wonder how many of those guys played prominently for Oklahoma's defense last year.
A lot of the guys, I remember Jackson saying at media days that a lot of the players he was closest with have also transferred.
Yeah,
you know, guys like Bauer from Alabama, who's now at LSU, the tight end, the receiver who had the game winner for Mississippi State in the Arizona State game. Thompson is a former Oklahoma receiver that was tight with Jackson Arnold. Talked about it at media days. So I mean, you have some of that, but no, I think. It seems like, you know, it's a new team. It's a new era as far as guys switching teams in that regard, and I wonder how much. And it wasn't like Jackson was there 4 years either, right?
No,
like
he was there for two.
He was there for two.
Redshirted and then was the starter going into the year and finished the year as
a
starter.
So I mean, I think he's had plenty of time to acclimate to his new settings and his new team, and he's not going to have any he's not going to be too torn allegiance-wise when he gets out there on Saturday.
No, and I saw a story today where Jackson's dad and his quarterback coach both saying they expect him to handle it pretty well, that he's a mature, pretty even-keeled guy.
And I think it's odd that for a game that Vegas feels comfortable putting in a touchdown, that they're so – that the consensus in the media, the consensus is so clearly towards Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's
Well, the media has been wrong on a few games this year, and we've been wrong on a few games this year. So
I know it just that this is one.
That's why you play them.
Yeah, this is one where I could see a lot of folks with egg on their face when it's over.
Fun talking about it though, getting ready for it, and we appreciate Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover being with us here in the studio for the first hour of the show today.
Should have Ferg in the studio tomorrow. We're back in the studio after a couple of Thursdays.
That's great to have him here. And then we've got David Paschal will be joining us in hour number two as well.
Yeah,
so.
looking forward to catching up with Ferg, I think, shortly before his trip to Texas, to Oklahoma, this weekend.
All right, so that's what's on tap for tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Fun show today. Hopefully we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.